In a world where our government hides its most coveted secrets, where truth becomes myth, and life-changing discoveries become hearsay and whisper, this is Hangar 18 Radio with your host, Russell David Pedersen.
Everybody, and welcome to yet another episode of Hangar 18 Radio. Like the man in the deep voice just mentioned, I am your host, Russell David Pedersen. Welcome all to this special edition episode of Hangar 18 Radio. Today with me, I have the host of The Paranormal Sun and one of my good friends, JT, here to talk about this crazy monolith action that's going on all over the world. Hey, JT, welcome back to Hangar 18 Radio.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Russ.
Hey, no problem. I thought I'd get you on here as our resident monolith expert. I haven't really been following this story at all, so I know you have for the past several weeks. And I kind of wanted to just get the whole story from you here because I really haven't had a chance to investigate it hardly at all. So I thought, who better than JT from The Paranormal Sun? So what's been going on with this monolith? Take us to the first time it appeared and where.
Yeah, awesome. No problem at all. So I first got news of the monolith around Thanksgiving Day. Somebody sent an article to me and said, hey, you should check this out. And I had a look at it, and basically it looked like an aluminum structure to me, about 10 feet tall. And it was slightly interesting, but it wasn't anything that I would go out of my way to get overly excited about. The biggest thing about it was that it was in a rather out-of-the-way location in Utah, in the high desert, outside of Moab, and it was in an area that's not easily accessible. You had to drive up a four-wheel drive track, and then you had to hike another 15 or 20 minutes to get to it. So, you know, I didn't really think about it too much.
Discovered by, like, helicopter pilots or something like
that? Yeah. Yeah, so as I started looking into it, because I had multiple people coming to me and saying, hey, what do you think about this? And I thought, well, four or five people asking about it, this has obviously, you know, caught a bit of the collective imagination. So let's look into this and find out something.
Right.
And that was exactly it. So the Bureau of Land Management was doing a bighorn sheep count Utah. Yeah. And they were flying over in a helicopter. And I can't remember off the top of my head if it was the pilot or one of the passengers, but they said, hang on, I see something glinting down there. Can we circle back? And they saw this monolith. They just saw a metal structure there in the desert. So they landed, and they went over and checked it out. And this was the first article, was this monolith and photos of these men in kind of like work uniforms, overalls,
right,
standing around it. And the BLM said, whoever did it, and they really kicked this all off, okay, because they said, we don't care if it was people from Earth or aliens that you basically placed it here. It's illegal to do, and you shouldn't be trespassing on public lands that are managed by the BLM to install any kinds of structures.
Okay.
So that was how it kind of – that's how it kicked off. And at that point, with Thanksgiving and everyone being a bit busy, it was just an interesting installation, let's say, in the desert. And then within a few days, it just kind of snowballed. There were a couple of people who drove overnight, 5-6 hours, to go and see it, turned up the next day and started taking photos of it and showing photos online, doing measurements and things like that. And then within a few hours of that, some guys turned up, took it apart, broke it up, threw it into a wheelbarrow, told the guys who were there on site, leave nothing behind, and turn around and wheeled it off.
Huh.
And so everyone was kind of going, what the heck is going on? And that day, the gentleman who went and took photos and everything else, he said that several hundred people in vehicles, and vehicles that really shouldn't be in this area because it's, like I say, these are four-wheel drive roads. People are turning up in minivans and station wagons and, yeah, everything else. And just hundreds of people to come and see this monolith. And it's caused a lot of issues in that area because this is a bit of kind of pristine high desert. And there's nothing around. I mean, it's just completely isolated. It makes Roswell look like New York City, okay? Wow. It's pretty isolated, yeah. And people are, you know, using the desert as a toilet and everything else. And basically, that was the story. As the story kind of unfolded, that was why these people had come in and taken it down.
I see.
And to me, it was pretty evident early on. There were comments saying, oh, well, there's no guarantee that the people who took it down were the people who put it up. And
well, that's what I was just going to ask you, like, who were these people that took it?
Yeah, and that's what I thought. Well, okay, let's just say this was a big publicity stunt and we were trying to get attention. I wouldn't turn up when there were other people there. Break it up. I mean, if anything, you would want to remove it in one piece. If, let's just say, for argument's sake, this was some kind of marketing campaign, and then you wanted to take it somewhere else, you wouldn't break it into pieces, put it in a wheelbarrow. But basically, these gentlemen have now come out. There was a group of four, and two of them came out, and they're basically kind of adrenaline junkies, but also people who enjoy hiking and things like that. And they basically said that they knew that this was going to become a magnet to people coming from the outside. Yeah, and basically the area couldn't handle this influx of visitors. It wasn't set up to deal with people coming in. There's no facilities. There's no bathrooms, everything else. And the BLM, they warned people off about going out there because, again, they were just afraid it was going to cause a huge influx of rescues, you know, needing to get vehicles, towed out. And
look how many
else.
People get stranded out there to begin with without no monolith there, let alone with one.
exactly. And so, you know, being 2020, that wasn't going to be the end of it, okay? It wasn't just going to be...
Of course not.
This, yeah, pops up and disappears. But anyway, this structure, like I say, it was about 10 feet tall. It was looked to be made out of a decent grade aluminum. When I looked at it, that's the first thing I thought was this is an aluminum structure, especially to get it out there and install it. The weight, if it was steel, it would be quite prohibitive to try and do.
Yeah.
And that's why some early pundits were kind of saying, well, maybe aliens dropped it there. But again, if you looked at this pretty quickly, you'd work out, well, if aliens were going to do it, I'm sure they have better things than nuts and bolts and rivets that were holding this together to assemble it. So within a day or so, sure enough, here we go, is another story passed on to me. Monolith appears in Romania. Hmm. And I'm going, okay, so not Utah, not even the U.S., but a completely different country. So I started looking into this one, and to me the cool bit was that it turned up near a ancient site, which was in the area of, they used to call it Dacia. So when the Romans had their empire, they called this area the Dacian frontier, which is Romania now, obviously. And there was a fort, and this appeared near this old Dacian fort. But yeah, I looked at it really quickly, and the comment I made on air was that it looked like when you're a kid and you draw smoke or hair and you draw like the curly Q type drawing. Another person online from another podcast quickly pointed out to say, this looks really kind of roughly made. And he made the right comment, which is these are like burnishing marks on it. And he was right. That's the proper term. And this looked to be made of kind of a low grade steel, not really stainless. And this one was really kind of thrown together, you could tell.
Okay.
But again, this one, same kind of dimensions, about 10 feet tall, about the same footprint. And within a day or so, this one vanished as well. And the mayor there in this small town in Romania made commentary about maybe it was aliens who did it. So again, you know, the poor aliens have been roped into this when it was obvious that if aliens were going to go through all this effort, I think they would have made something a bit more robust and something a bit more upscale than this poor representation.
I remember talking to a buddy of mine about it in the beginning, like, you know, the first couple of days that it appeared, and he was saying that it could have been a remnant from an old U2 video from Rattle and Hum. Like it could have been some kind of like prop or something they were using at one time. I kind of thought that was, I'm like, hey, it could be, you know, I don't know. But
well, look, that's an angle that I hadn't heard. So thanks for that, because I'll go away and I will look into that. As time went on with the Utah monolith, within a day or two after, I saw another post online and it was showing Google Earth footage or similar, showing that this was erected sometime in or around 2015 to 2016, because they had one passover image of nothing, and then when the next satellite passed over and took the photo, it was suddenly there.
Wait, so you're saying it's been there for 4 years?
Yeah.
Really?
All indications are that it's been there since at least 2016.
Okay. And, well, that rules out Rattle and Hum, then.
Well, and one of the leading theories early on was that a surrealist artist named John McCracken built this, because he had built several similar, I won't say much like, but similar art exhibits. He did these things called planks, and he would basically take like a plank of wood and he would cover it over in resin, and he would leave it laying somewhere. Basically, his whole idea was, I wanted people to think that you'd walk along and you would find this art exhibit of this plank, and it would look like maybe somebody was assembling a bed or something and just walked off and forgot about it.
Okay.
And because of that similarity, there were people saying, well, maybe this is a John McCracken.
Ah.
His gallery in New York that represented him said, oh, it's definitely a McCracken. There's one problem with that. John McCracken died in 2011.
Interesting.
So there is one potential that I didn't latch onto immediately, but afterwards, with some thought, I did realize that, look, maybe it was an exhibit that John McCracken had made, and after his death, someone had gone out and put it in the desert.
Okay.
It seems that the whole reason why people are latching onto this McCracken thing, aside from the aesthetics of it, is that he made comments to his son before he died saying that he would love to place artwork out in the wilderness where people would find it years later and then be reminded of his work.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And that seems to be really what this story has been, you know, latching onto as far as the McCracken thing. And his, obviously the man's passed on, but he, you know, his work and everything else has got a massive boost lately. I'll be honest, I had no idea who John McCracken was. When I looked at some of the artwork and that, I went, okay, I've seen this or I've seen that, but I didn't know it was John McCracken.
Oh, okay.
But that was all the early indications were saying this is an art installation of some sort. And the one in Utah was actually affixed into the rock, the bedrock. So someone came with a rock saw and cut the bedrock installed it there. Yeah. So this was not just, let's go and throw it up. Whereas the one in Romania basically looked to be planted in the ground like, you know, a Christmas tree almost. They just basically stuck it in the ground and kicked some soil over it.
You're right. I noticed there's some displaced dirt on the bottom there. But then they had smoothed it out a little bit better like a few days after that. I noticed, too, that it looked a little cleaner. So
yeah.
I don't know if that was just for the photo op, but.
Well, that, again, similar to the Utah deal, the one in Romania, basically the archaeologist came out straight away and said, this is a protected site and it shouldn't be here. And there were definitely people that were there 3 to 4 days before it was discovered and there was nothing there. So if I had to guess, I would say whoever did it very quickly realized, I really don't want to face charges, so I'll go and take it down. I did, to me, the cool bit about the Romanian one was the vista view of where it was placed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That just looked awesome.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought that better than the Utah one, it probably could handle people trekking there and everything else. And although, like I say, not the high quality, aside from it being on a protected site, I thought that that was a good way to, if you wanted to draw tourists, then that would be a good way to do it. So those two both disappeared, right? And you've got all this conjecture, mainly around the Utah one, again, saying who did it, when, why. And these,
what was the time frame between the first one and the second one?
So the Utah one, my understanding off the top of my head was it disappeared in and around the 27th of November in the U.S.
Okay.
And then the one in Romania either cropped up the next day or the day after that.
Oh.
But, yeah, it was within only a day or two. It was basically the one in Utah disappeared and the one in Romania appeared, and then the next day the one in Romania disappeared. So, you know, a bit of musical chairs here with the monolith. But then it got even stranger because by this point I was following the news. I was getting, literally, I would complete a program and come out of the studio, go and check my IMs and my emails, and I would have more articles sent to me, and they weren't about what I just recorded. So I'm going, okay, well, there's going to be a follow-up episode. And when I promise people I'll cover something, come hell or high water, man, I'll cover it to the bitter end. That's part of being in this field. That's my personal opinion. I've got the time, whereas, you know, I'm fortunate right now. I'm not working a day job, so I had the time to do it. And I thought, right, I'll get out there and I'll cover it. So sure enough, here we go, about halfway between San Francisco and L.A. on a mountaintop. Another one turns up in Atascadero, California. And this one definitely was a lot more reflective. And I very quickly looked at it and said, that looks to be stainless steel to me. It turned up, some hikers went up, took photos with it, and started getting a little bit of buzz about it in the area, but, you know, nothing too massive. And then within a couple days of that one going up, gentlemen, let's say, that I'm not, I'm trying to be polite, but it was basically men chronologically, but boys mentally turned up. Yeah, they went onto social media, not one of the major social media outlets. Basically, I've been away from the U.S. long enough, okay? The whole 4chan and all that is not really something that I'm an expert on. But it's kind of, this site that they went on would be kind of similar to something like that. It's not something like Instagram or Facebook where everybody's got access to it. You basically have to go looking for it. Well, these guys had the most bizarre, I don't know how to describe it, the most bizarre ceremony. They turned up there at nighttime. They live streamed 5 hours in their vehicle. They claim that they drove from 5 hours away. They claim that they're Marines. It was for, not that it matters, but, you know, just for clarification, four young men, all, you know, Caucasian or white. They turned up and basically had this ceremony, said that it was art major crap, called it some other derogatory terms, started going on about how they didn't want any Mexicans, whether they be, didn't want any aliens, whether they be Mexicans or from outer space. Jeez. Turning up, yeah, that this is America and Christ is king. And then they tore it down, kicked it. But this is the topper, folks. This could only happen in 2020. They lynched the monolith. So they tied a rope around the monolith and started dragging it down the mountain while swearing at it. Well, kicking it and spitting on it. Yeah, if you would have said to me 2 months ago, here's this script for a Hollywood TV show or a movie, and if you gave this to me, I would say no one would ever believe this, man. Come on, what kind of fantasy is this? But yeah, these guys literally did this all while live streaming, drug it down the mountain, and then said that people were sicking canines on them and claimed that Antifa was... Yeah, Antifa was following them and after them. And again, folks, this is a pretty remote location where they're not. Yeah, it's just so over the top. And anyway, all I've got to say about these gentlemen is they had better hope that they're not Marines, because there is footage of them. I saw a photo with all four of their faces that are pretty clear. If they are Marines, I would say at the least, some of the comments they made about minorities and other people in general, I would say at the least they're looking at dishonorable discharge. Yeah, it's
well, didn't they leave a cross in its place?
Yes, too? That's right. Thanks, Russ. They basically erected a cross, and as you would expect from men of this high caliber, they chose plywood as the material to make the cross out of. 10 feet tall, yeah, and basically erected this cross. And again, just commenting over and over how Christ is king. And basically my feeling, although, you know, I'm not 100% sure, is that basically they were saying that this was an idol or a pagan type idol, and that they were doing God's work in their own minds to tear it down and replace it with a cross.
You know, that brings up just another strange parallel with this whole thing, how it's kind of morphing into something political or something religious. And I've noticed that so much lately with just the UFO phenomena in general, how it's being weaponized as a religious war almost these days. Even the whole QAnon movement and the good versus evil, you know, Republican QAnon members are fighting God's fight against the demonic interdimensional Democrats. You know, I mean, that's what this is turning into, and this monolith is now involved. You know, it's like, come on, what is going on here?
Well, look, you're right, man.
You know, I'm not the one to even judge any of that, but like, I find it strange that like, how this UFO field that didn't have anything to do with religion in the 90s whatsoever, if you remember X-Files and things like that, like hardly had anything to do with it. Now it's this really interconnected big deal. It's just very strange to me.
No, you're absolutely right. And you look at things like how everybody says, whether it's certain people in the UFO field, depending on which side of the political fence they're on, you know, they'll say, for example, when, you know, Trump was running, oh, if Trump gets in, he's going to disclose. And then, you know, people are saying, oh, well, Biden, he's going to disclose. And look, folks, okay, we've, at least since Eisenhower and probably before that, the government's sitting on something. So even if, let's say, aliens aren't here and we don't know all about it, there's something going on with this UFO phenomenon. Millions of people all over the world are seeing something. Now, even if that's mass hallucinations, it's something the government must be interested in, for God's sakes, because it affects national security. If you've got millions of your own people seeing things that aren't there, it affects things. So if this has gone on all this time and no one's disclosed, what makes you think that all of a sudden somebody, just because they are on your side of the political fence, is going to get in and suddenly disclose everything? You're absolutely right. It's a trend, as you know, that's been going on more and more over the last 8 to 12 years. I mean, it was going on before, but it's kind of really picked up momentum where everything is becoming politicized and people are roping every... I'm surprised during the elections I didn't see people posting Sasquatch wearing a Biden or a Trump, you know, banner saying, oh, if you don't vote, if you don't vote for this person, you don't believe in me.
Right. Yeah. I don't understand. I guess, I mean, because it's becoming more mainstream and in the public eye that religious people, I guess, are taking note of it and putting their spin on it. That's the only thing that I can think of. You know, just like those top Pentagon officials calling UFOs demonic in nature, the UAPs, you know, like that's the people that are defending our nation right now, you know, in my country. And like they're calling them demons. It's just, well, okay.
Well, look at the Vatican commentary from a few years ago. I can't remember the exact date, but it's been in the last 3 or 4 years where it's, you know, they've slowly, because for years and years and years, as we all know, you know, Copernicus was burnt for saying that the Earth was not the center of the solar system, really the universe, but at least the solar system. And now we've got a pope who has basically said, I'm not sure if he said it himself, but definitely his cardinals have said, there's no issue if there are aliens in other worlds, and that they'll be the first ones to baptize them if they wanted to convert to Catholicism. Now, folks, I mean, you're talking about an institution that burned people for even thinking
right.
that there was anything else to the universe, to now basically saying, hey, we're open to the idea, and if they want to join and they want to pay tithe, hey, we'll sign them up.
As long as they pay, right.
That's it. And then you look at, I might have the location wrong, but I think it's Mount Graham in Arizona, that the Catholic Church
yes.
owns one of the largest telescopes in the southwestern U.S., and Russ, you may very well know. I don't know if the listeners do, but do you know what that telescope is called or what they term it as?
Yes, I do. Its name is Lucifer.
That's a very, very interesting term. And for the listeners who don't know, Lucifer actually means light bringer, is actually what that title stands for.
I believe, the Morning Star?
Yep.
The Morning Star is
yep.
the devil, right? That whole thing. and they've been buying observatories. I think it's been going on almost 20 years now. I remember first hearing about it on Art Bell like 20 years ago.
And that's where I was introduced to it as well, was on Art Bell. And it's quite fascinating because let's just say this is normal, okay? Let's just say this is a normal approach that a religion would take. How many and again, folks, we're not talking about somebody in their backyard with an 8-inch telescope. We're talking about multi-million-dollar massive telescope in the middle of nowhere. So where's the one that the Buddhists own?
Yeah.
Where's the one that the Mormons own?
Right.
Where's the one that the Baptists? You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
Look, I don't think that they just decided, well, here's a good write-off for taxes, is we'll just throw up this telescope.
You know, and that just makes me believe more in the ancient alien theory, and that there's something in our past that's missing that we don't know of, and some people do. Whether that be the Illuminati, the religious leaders, secret societies, there's something that they're not telling us. There's a part of history that's been left out, and that's definitely something that has to be known, I guess. You know, and it's just strange that. They're posturing like they are right now in religious aspects.
Well, look, in my mind, there's no doubt that there are certain groups on this planet that have access to knowledge that you and I as laymen do not. And why am I keeping it so vanilla to say that? Because it's provable. For example, folks, the Masons have information that you and I as a person on the street do not have, that we're not privy to. I'm not trying to pick on the Masons. I'm saying that all of these secret societies, whether it's the Masons, whether it's the upper layers in the LDS or the Mormon Church, whether it's on and on and on, the Rosicrucians, the what's the monastic order? I lost my train of thought. The Catholic Church, on and on and on. There
the
are things that the Jesuits, thank you, that's what I was thinking of. All of these different groups, and again, I'm not saying it's all a nefarious plot to overthrow mankind. I'm just saying that there's definitely information out there. So if you are looking at this with your skeptic hat on and you say, oh, well, you know, you two are just crackpots, this is why I'm keeping it so vanilla. There's definitely information out there that we're not privy to. Skull and Bones is another Bohemian group. It's why I'm keeping it at that level is to say you can't deny this. You can't deny that there is at least some information that we're not privy to as the average Joe blog on the street.
You know, there's a reason why they call them secret societies, because they keep secrets. We don't know much about them. You know, it's funny. It reminds me of, I remember listening to Richard C. Hoagland a long time ago, 25 plus years ago on Art Bell. And he was talking about old Navy stores and how that if you ask to go in the back, I know this is Richard C. Hoagland, you know, some of the stuff he used to say is hilarious. But like he would say that if you go in the back of an old Navy store, that you will find maps of the way the world is going to look after the next flood will come along, you know? And I'm like, so even old Navy is a secret society, you know? So it's like, I just, from hearing that, I just brought that up into my head and I had to share it.
I would like to make it clear on the air that I, for one, welcome my naval overlords when when the time is due. I'm ready to play ball and broadcast for you.
We will all get a, you know, an outfit, including a generic New York City shirt that lasts only a year, and a $20 pair of jeans. You know.
And again. Folks, I like to have fun with this kind of stuff. There's a lot of things with almost any researcher that I agree with, and there are certain things that I don't. And I'm sure if I sat there and I laid out everything, how I see the world, how I see the universe and everything else, there would be things that you agree with and there would be things that you don't. So, you know, don't think that we're just taking a shot at poor Richard C. He does a lot of good work, but it's not just him. There are theories in every field. Some of my most favorite authors, my most favorite researchers over the years, there are some things that I listen to and I go, yeah, that's a step too far for me personally.
Hey, I remember listening to Richard C. Hoagland and just being on the edge of my seat, because there's certain like paths that he'll go down with numbers and the correlation with numbers and things like that are just, it's just amazing. And I can sit there and listen, you know, hours to him talking about stuff like that. And I have, you know,
same here. And personally, the thing that I enjoy so much about Richard C. Hoagland and so many other people we've discussed is their passion comes through. I mean, this man has been covering this in his, you know, what he purports to be a cover-up from NASA and the government and the other space agencies of the world for far longer than I've been alive. And yet to this day, when you hear him speak, when you hear him on podcasts and programs, he's, you know, he's got a passion about it. And I fully respect that, because I've got the same passion for everything I cover. And even if we don't agree on every, you know, dotted I and cross T, it doesn't mean that you throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. There's always something that, is a grain of truth, and, you know, he's reputable too. The science advisor to Walter Cronkite back in the day. Yeah. And he's, you know, done better than us. That's for sure.
no doubt. And one of the things that I've heard him say over and over again that's really interesting, I can't remember, I think it was after the actual Apollo mission to the moon and that, or very shortly after, so what I'm saying is not 5 or 10 years later, he said that they were doing a press briefing and there was this guy going around and he had these little cards and he had these little Mylar balloons, and this guy back in 1969 was basically saying that the moon landings were all a fraud back then. And he said, you know, he said repeatedly, I wish I would have gotten a hold of, because he said to him at the time, it was just so ridiculous that anyone would purport to say that this didn't happen, that he just laughed him off as a kook. And he said if he would have realized that all these years later, it would have become, you know, a real movement, that there are a lot of people that believe it was all hoaxed, he would have held on to this. He really wishes that he did. So, yeah, it's just something interesting that oftentimes we hear about these things. We might think they're only a few years old. And here, you know, he basically said this has existed from much the time that it happened. Yeah.
Yeah, that is amazing. And to have all that stuff come out with Stanley Kubrick and the whole tie-in with the Shining movie and the kid wearing the Apollo shirt and playing with a rocket. And the room number is the distance between the moon and the earth, and the time frame from when that film was made and the moon landing. It's just, you know, things are conspiracies and coincidences for a reason. You know, I mean there's definitely coincidences there, convenient coincidences. So who knows? I'm no scientist or anything like that, but you know, to go into space without the computer systems that we have now, that we didn't even have something that is the equivalent of our cell phones, you know, back in that day. It all had to be done with like tape, reel to reel computers that took up the size of a whole office building, you know, to even compile that rocket trajectories and stuff like that. It's just amazing to think that we could just do that in a 5-10 year span, you know. I mean, that's so much engineering, and it's just amazing. So maybe, you know, I don't know, I've always thought that like we might have not made it there initially, and maybe got there the second or third time for real, but it's definitely a conspiracy.
Well, as Jim Mars, who was one of my favorite authors and people who covered these kind of subjects, used to say, and people often hear the words, you know, conspiracy theory, and they go, oh. But the reality is, the definition of a conspiracy theory is that if at least two people conspire, then it's a conspiracy, okay? Right. So, you know, when these people get this grand thing that it must be everyone in the world involved, you know, that's always what skeptics say. Oh, well, you're telling me that everyone is involved? It doesn't have to be everyone. If there are two people involved, it's a conspiracy theory. Anyway, my only rebuttal that I would say about that, and the potential for having built those rockets so quickly and gotten into space, you look at World War II, okay? When you went into World War II, you had people in the cavalry, you had Polish cavalry, you had British biplanes, and by the end of the war, you had rockets that could fly across the continent of Europe, you had jet airplanes, you had submarines that could stay underwater for days on end, and you had atomic bombs, and that happened in 6 years. So I'm not saying that I couldn't be wrong, Russ. I'm just saying that when you're under the pump and when you think that, you know, like the missile gap that happened in World War II, after World War II in the Cold War, if you throw enough money at something and you've got enough pressure on, there is the potential that you can very quickly. And hey, man, you know, Project Paperclip with all those great Nazi scientists that, you know, hey, why use homegrown American knowledge when you can have German imports, you know?
Yeah, you can start the Fourth Reich here. Yeah, that's a whole different story.
Exactly.
So what do you think, going back to the monoliths here, what do you think this really is? What do you think these are?
So the latest episode that I just turned out about, kind of 5 hours ago, there have actually been a few more turn up, believe it or not. So there was one in West Jordan. Yeah, there's one in West Jordan, Utah, that turned up that looked to be very similar to the one in Atascadero. And then there was one in San Antonio. Now, that one is a bit of a laugh. When I looked at it, I would have thought maybe this is a poorly polished aluminum structure, but they said in the article that it was basically planks painted to look like the monolith. So when you looked at it with that context, I said, okay, look, this is wood. And then there is a third one, though, that's turned up in Las Vegas, and in Las Vegas, not out in the desert somewhere.
Oh, in the city?
In the city, yeah. And that is actually the cover for the latest episode that I've got that's called Monolith Multiplication. So every episode I've done, I've tried to make it, you know, double M's.
Yep.
But that one, yeah, and it's that one is actually like high quality polished because you can see the reflection of the person taking the photograph in it. So if I had to guess, the one in Utah, I feel was definitely an art exhibit of some sort that was put out there, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. Somebody thought they'd put it out there and is fine. You know, I think that what happened was that after it was spotted, I would say that even if those gentlemen didn't go and tear it down, I would say that the person who did it would have eventually went and got it because they would have been fearful of being prosecuted for doing it on public land. The one in Romania, to me, it was just, you know, there would have been somebody who saw a chance to kind of get a bit of fame, like a would have knocked one out. Yeah, because it was pretty poorly made. I'd say they knocked it out in their machine shed and went and threw it up there. And then the one in California, again, I would say it was a copycat, but much better made. And it's a shame that these hooligans went and tore it down because I thought it was actually a pretty cool calling card for them. It was in an area where hikers go anyway. I think it could have done a good job for them. Because at the end of the day with all of this, the thing that's disappointed me is there are a lot of people out there in the world right now that just want something, anything to distract them from COVID, from politics, right, from job losses and everything else. And this was a pretty feel-good story because it was a bit of a mystery. It's not hurting anyone, really. I get what they said in Utah, and I'm pretty neutral on that. I'm not necessarily upset they tore it down. I just wish they would have maybe contacted BLM or something. But, you know, it's a feel-good story in my mind, and it's something that gets people thinking. But, yeah, I would say that the initial one in my mind was some sort of art exhibition. There is a gentleman in Utah who's now claiming credit for it. He calls himself the greatest artist. So, you know, generally, okay. Yeah, exactly. Generally, when you have to go around blowing your own horn, you're not the greatest anything.
Right.
But, yeah. The bottom line is, man, every time I think this is done,
keeps coming back.
Yeah, hold my beer, you know, hold my beer.
You know, I after I seen several of them pop up, I'm like, is this just a coordinated campaign for some slow disclosure thing going on, possibly? But also, I kind of thought more of just, you know, just copycat people doing it too at the same time. But, you know, is it just readying us for something, getting us ready for the whole Project Blue Book, where we're either going to see a big mothership in the sky, you know, in 2021, or we're going to see Jesus surf in the clouds like that one clip we saw a couple weeks ago, you know? It just seems a little strange that that they brought it up right now, you know? And I can understand the distractions of this year, and there's been a lot of them. There's been, you know, race wars. There's been riots in the streets. Yeah. There's been,
terrorist attacks.
There's, you know, come on. Let's get this year over with already, you know? But, like, I see it as maybe something like that, just a distraction to you know, get people's minds off what's going on right now, because there's a lot of important things going on right now that everyone chooses to ignore. So it's a tough call on that one, I think, right?
Well, something that I hadn't thought about until you just mentioned it, really, and we started kind of talking about it in some of our other conversations. Look, again, I'm sure there are going to be people out there already who think that I'm a bit off the deep end, so I don't really care, but I wouldn't put it past a intelligence-type organization to float something like this out there to kind of see if they can get it to trend, if it's some kind of traction that they could get out there to, as you were saying, Project Bluebeam, you know, hey, if we get this out there and we get it trending, what kind of play will we get? Will it be positive reaction from people? Will it be negative? So, look, Russ, that's a very valid point that this could be something that could be a bit of a test, you know, case. They're floating it out there to kind of see what kind of uptake it will get. And then again, the other point you made, again, excellent point. I mean, for those of you who don't really follow this kind of stuff, folks, go back and look through history and look at some of the times that when you get into this time of year, you get up into the Christmas and holiday break, and governments all over the world, but especially the U.S., you know, Congress and Senate, they will go and pass really extreme laws or really controversial things.
Yep.
When people are out of town, when people are looking the other way, the classic misdirection, you know, the old Muhammad Ali rope-a-dope, look this way while I hit you this
shiny
way.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Patriot Act, which is, You know, I really love how, in retrospect, everybody dumps on that Patriot Act, but I can tell you at the time that it passed, hey, I was there. I was living in Southern California, and everybody was saying, we've got to do what we need to do to but nobody had read it. Nobody knew what was in the damn act. And, and then retrospectively, they all started moaning 4 or 5 years later, and I'm going, well, you know, again, folks, I'm not blaming everyone at home because none of us were there passing this bill. I fully get that. But if we would have at least paid attention to what was going on, that's where the old saying is, you know, write your congressman. Nowadays, it would be, I am your congressman on Instagram or whatever they're hanging out on today, Twitter or TikTok, and tell them that you're not going to stand by and let them take away something else that our forefathers fought for.
Right.
Russ and I have had these talks, but look, I've been of the opinion for a very long time that they were not going to push through a lot of things that took away rights while the World War II generation were alive, because I grew up around many of them, and those people would not put up with this BS. They would not put up with, you know, some stuffed shirt telling them, well, you can't do this, that, or the other. They would tell them, well, okay, well, meet me on the dueling grounds in the morning then, you know. They just wouldn't live for it.
Do it old school.
That's it. Those people didn't mess around, and it wasn't just the soldiers that went and fought in the war. I knew a lot of housewives in that, you know, were in America for World War II, and going through that, you know, I get that it wasn't the suffering of, you know, being bombed or whatever, but look, they made a lot with a little, and they definitely, it made them tough, and they weren't going to put up with stuff like what unfortunately has been rammed through, especially in the last 20 years.
Exactly. Yeah, let alone our health care bill, the 10,000-page bill, it was probably brought in the middle of the night as well, you know, under our sleeping eyes, unfortunately. And now I don't have a tax return, but that's a whole different story. It kind of seemed like something like that. Either it's just a funny distraction, like you said, something shiny to distract everybody to what's actually going on, or could it be kind of a soft, you know, I guess, stepping point for disclosure? I know we had the whole Pentagon they basically just told everybody they have extraterrestrial craft or a part of an extraterrestrial craft.
Wow. Obviously, I've been too caught up in the monolith marathon, and I missed that, Russ.
Well, I think it was part of the whole Luis Elizondo and the guy from Blink 182.
Right, Tom DeLonge.
Tom DeLonge. From what I understand, there was a briefing, and they have a piece of an extraterrestrial craft, and they presented it to the Pentagon. Or vice versa, or the Pentagon is saying that we have a piece of it, you know, and they slip that under the radar too, you know. I mean, I just learned about it a couple months ago, or a little less than a month ago. So you have that. You have, you know, Trump's Space Force coming out this year too.
Space Force, that's it, yeah.
Yep, and you got a show on Netflix, you know, readying the public for such things. You know, starring Michael Scott from The Office. You know, it's like it's just these soft disclosure stepping stones that we see. Well, you know, peppered here and there.
Well, it's interesting what you were saying about this, Russ, because this is a bit of a scoop for your listeners. I haven't mentioned any of this on the Paranormal Sun yet. But I've got a very close friend of the show who has been one of the biggest supporters from the beginning, and he often feeds me information, and he sent this to me earlier this week or last week, and again, it's just got lost in the shuffle. This might be exactly what you're talking about. I'm just looking at it right now.
Okay.
He sent me the entire thing, which is good, a PDF.
I don't think I was right on it, so I'm glad you got some articles up right now.
this is actually a PDF. And this is the Begin, Set, At, Center for Strategic Studies. the Pentagon's UAP Task Force report, which has been sent to me, and I haven't had a chance to look at it any further than what I've just read, but I will definitely be going through this, Russ, and if I find anything like that in here, I'll make sure to come back and report to you so that you've got the page and everything else, because, again, this is not some, you know, quote-unquote crackpot website. This is the actual report, and looking at it, I've been in business long enough. This is a professionally written report. This isn't, you know, what somebody slapped up with Photoshop.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, it's just I see these more and more now, and I just think that they're getting to something. They're trying to make us, you know, make us realize that there's something going to happen soon. So whether these monoliths are part of that, you know, that's tough to say, but.
Well, you know, I've had people ask me so many times in life in general, and I've heard it asked on other programs, and they'll say, oh, well, why are they so afraid to tell us what's going on? Well, to me personally, it boils down to a few things. So first and foremost, okay, why do we pay taxes, right? Why in the U.S. especially, why are you giving a third of your income to the government? And more, you know, when you pay state and local taxes and property taxes. Well, what's one of the major things that that's going to? We all know it's going to the military-industrial complex.
Yep.
So if they have to come out and admit that there is something that is basically having free reign to do whatever the hell it wants in our supposedly the most protected airspace in the world over the continental U.S., then why are we paying you all this money? And why are you spending so much money on military when you can't defend us from anything?
Yeah.
If that is the truth,
right?
So that's the first point that I, in my mind, that always is at the front. The other one is, I want to say it was the Brookings report that was done in the 60s. I might have the report wrong, but the nuts and bolts of the report is this. They basically went out and they did a survey, and they said, what would happen if we, you know, if people found out that there was other life in the universe, and it was basically, you know, dogs mating with cats and, you know, everything imploding, and basically everyone will lose faith in religion and riot and destroy the earth. So that's what, and they often say that this is why the Pentagon and militaries around the world are very leery. But again, this was done a very long time ago. Look, I can't remember the 60s. I was born in 1977. But even from the 80s and 90s to now, the way that society looks at these things, I personally feel there are certain countries and certain, let's say, hardcore religious elements that would not look at this very kindly. But I would say that the vast majority of the world would have no issue if you came out tomorrow and said, hey, look, we're not all there is in the universe. Now, if you came out and said to them, well, there's a fleet on the way and you're all going to be wiped out in 6 days, that might be a little different reaction. But just to come out with a very blanket statement to say there's other intelligent life somewhere in this universe, I would think that the vast majority of people would have no issues with that and would just go on living their lives as normal.
And I think that's because of a conditioning that we've had, and it's going on almost 100 years.
Yep.
And I think it's a changing of power, of a structured power system. Like back in the day when they house arrested Galileo or
Copernicus, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Because he, you know, discovered something based in science. That was coming from a power structure. We're coming from a power structure of a monotheism power structure, and that's slowly being deteriorated. From the way I see it, going from way back then, from that power structure to what it's turning into now, they're preparing us for a new fear. The old fear was hell. The old fear was burning in hell. The new fear is being laser beamed by aliens, you know, from the sky.
Yes.
You know, and it's just a turning of, we have to get them scared about something. We have to get them scared otherwise they're uncontrollable.
Well, you know, on that point, we've had, again, folks, Russ and I have had a lot of discussions, you know, that have not made it to air on either show. But one of the things that I've always found most fascinating is a story that came out about Wernher von Braun. Yep. So Wernher von Braun was the head scientist that basically designed the V2 rocket for the Nazis. He was then drafted in to basically make the Apollo missions viable to go to the moon, if that's what you believe. And, you know, and why not? Because he was basically the leading rocket expert in the world at the time. Now, his...
He bombed the hell out of England, basically.
Yeah, yes, yeah. And you can see why it was pretty hush-hush when the U.S., you know, took him over. The Allies wouldn't have been very happy to find out that he was, you know, they claimed he had nothing to do with it. And,
right.
You know, lots has come out since. But anyway, exactly. Yes. Yeah. Only following orders. But the story
ends up on
goes
the Disney
that,
Channel.
Yeah. And ends up on the Disney Channel smoking a cigarette and, you know, hanging out with old Walt.
Yep.
But the tale about Wernher von Braun, and it was relayed by his housekeeper, maid, nurse. I'm sorry, I just can't remember which one or if it was all of them, but it was one lady. I could have even been his secretary. Now, again, this was all her, you know, recollections of his basic deathbed confession, where he told her, look, things are not as you think they are. Basically, the first thing that the powers that be will do is blame communism, and communism will be the great boogeyman, because that's what the military industrial complex needs to say. They need all of this money and power and control. Then after the communists are wiped out and they die off, then the next will be terrorism. And after terrorism ends, the last and final claim will be that there is an off-world threat, that there are aliens that are going to come to this world and wipe us out. And therefore, we need all the power that we can get and all of the money and resources to prepare you for this threat. So,
we need to band
Russ
together
is,
as one world to fight the new threat.
Exactly. And eerily enough, there is some corroboration in what she said. As you have pointed out before, Ronald Reagan's speech to the United Nations, yep, amongst other things, yeah, about saying, what would we do as humans? How quickly would we unite if we found out there was a threat from off-world to our planet?
Yep. And wasn't that discovered through WikiLeaks? I think that was put out, if I'm not mistaken, that whole von Braun deathbed confession.
I would have first heard it, me personally, I heard it first from, you guessed it, Richard C. Hoagland.
Okay.
Because obviously having that NASA tie-in, I know he named the lady. So look, folks, it's not an anonymous person. It's just I can't even remember what her name is. He knew her name, and it would be harder. It would be easy enough to find out very quickly if you wanted to know. Just basically Google, you know, Wernher von Braun deathbed confession, something along those lines, and you would very quickly get it to come up.
You know, and they have the technology. They have patents for projection into the sky. We might have seen that with that dancing Jesus in the sky a few months back during the summer. Let alone any of these other things, like
the Norway spiral.
That the UAPs that the Navy saw, like there could be something that could actually show physical anomalies that show up on radar that could just be projections. You know, the whole city in the sky in China, I think that was.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
So they have the technology. I mean, and look at our moon. You know, like if they can make something look like our moon, I mean, our moon looks fake, to be honest. You know, like you look at it and sometimes it's just like, wow, that's really up there. You know, that could be like anything, you know, like it's just amazing. But like, I wouldn't put it past them.
Well, it's one of those things that I find it very clever. At the time I found it a very clever script writing, But now in retrospect, it's looking more and more like maybe they knew something that we don't. So The Time Machine by H.G. Wells, you know, we almost all of us know that book. For me, I'm of that generation that I grew up. To me, it'll always be the 1950s or 1960s version where he had the very cool looking chariot and he went to the future. But in the remake that they did in the last kind of, 10-ish years, when he basically said, oh, what happened, you know, what was the great disaster that befell mankind, and he's kind of in the holographic library, the librarian basically tells him that they were advertising on the moon, and it had something to do with these explosions that happened on the moon, and the moon basically broke into pieces and threw the Earth out of, you know, tidal displacement and everything else. And basically, I think from memory, they were saying that a pole shift basically is what, wiped out civilization. But again, Russ, you're saying there, you know, it's, we're getting closer and closer to that being a possibility. You know, I can see them trying to do, there's already, if you believe that we've been to the moon and that, you know, they already say that there's a laser somewhere that bounces back and forth from the moon, and they still calibrate lasers to this day by doing that.
So. And it measures distance. Yeah. And each year that distance gets farther and farther away from the Earth. So what is that doing? If that's so construct to our life here on this planet, the distance between us and the moon, and that moon is controlling things for us and making it habitable for us to live, and that thing is slowly like branching off from its orbit from our Earth, what's going to happen when that finally decides to say, okay, I'm going to take off somewhere else now, you know, and what's going to happen, you know?
Well, there are certain, you know, I'll keep it PC so I don't get called any more of a kook, but there are certain myths or legends of certain cultures, and the reason I say that, folks, is I just can't remember which off the top of my head, that claim there was a time before the Earth had a moon, when there were no moons in the sky, and that there, and again, these are not people that are saying long before mankind existed. We're talking about in living memory of the species. So it does make you wonder, as you're saying. I mean, we know that there have been eclipses recorded at least 3 or 4 or 5,000 years in the past. So if the moon has been drifting all this time or moving, you know, to me, I just find it quite astounding that the moon is in exactly the right position, that it completely covers the sun for an eclipse and the moon, and yet at the same time, not too much so that you don't get the corona around the moon. You know, it's, and again, if this has been going on for 4, 5, 6, 10, 12, 20,000 years and it's drifting, then what's kept it from getting too far one way or the other, if that makes sense?
Yeah. And did they put it like too far in to begin with so it would drift? You know, like, you know, it kind of harkens to intelligent design almost too. I've been reading a lot about that lately, and how that can, there's certain things just for this planet to, you know, have life on it. There really is, there's no scientific explanation for life. They kind of know how it works and why, but they have not ever been able to reproduce life from nothing, you know?
That's what I was going to say. Contrary to popular belief where they make you believe that, we can create life in the lab.
Nope.
No, they've been able to replicate things like very simple amino acids and that.
Yeah.
But they've not been able to say, here's a test tube with nothing, and now here's bacteria or, you know, that we've created. They've only been able to obviously do things like revive bacteria that may have been dormant for thousands of years, but they've not actually been able to create it out of thin air. So, you know, Dr. Frankenstein, if he was around today, if he was a real person, you know, he would still be 200 plus years after that book was written, he would still be the first to create life from nothing.
You know, and it makes me think with what's going on with technology these days, are we creating life through technology? And are we just some ancient form of technology that a race of beings made and our knowledge just on our own, much like our technology would be, you know, thousands of years from now, with it being, you know, awakened by AI and self-replicating, like our cells are, you know, through the use of photosynthesis and things like that. I mean, are we just some kind of technology that life itself, or life in general, just some kind of self-replicating, self-healing technology that was set loose?
Well, look at the fact that, you know, mankind's DNA has this huge percentage of quote-unquote junk DNA.
Right.
That they don't know what it does. They don't know why it's there. And, you know, there are, as with anything, look, again, folks, I know I may sound like the person who's just completely against science. That's not the fact. My biggest issue with science as a field is human hubris to think that we know everything about everything ever. And to me, it's just patently ridiculous. We don't even know what happened on this earth 5 or 6,000 years ago with any real clarity. How in the hell can we know what happened when life began here? It's great to make, you know, again, I get scientific method and everything else, and it's, I've got no issues with them saying that we have this theory, but it's a theory until you can prove it. And if you've got that time machine to go back and find out what happened, I've got better uses for it, my friends.
like I said, I always say, we just figured out plate tectonics like 100 years ago or less, you know, and we think we know all this stuff. It's just an arrogance. That's all it is.
Well, and there's, like you were saying about our DNA and everything else, and our makeup as a species. Well, look at, I can't think of the proper term, but the way that it was described to me is that on your shoelaces at the end, there's that plastic bit that wraps around and basically coats your shoelace. They say that in our DNA, there's this is the equivalent that holds the strands together. And basically, they found out that no matter what they do, our DNA has got, we have a mortality cap as humans, that 120-ish years, folks, and that's it. So this is not mere chance. So what I'm saying is, if you take an individual and put them in a lab setting and protect them from everything and feed them and protect them from bacteria, guess what, folks? You're still gonna die. Yeah, it's not one of those things where it's like, oh well, it's the environment that kills us off. So again, as you're saying, you know, Russ, intelligent design is that what it is? Is it something else? The more we find out, really, in my personal opinion, the more we find out, the less we know.
Exactly. Yep. Just like these monoliths.
Oh, well, look, I have no doubt that there will be more coming up in future. I made a prediction. I've done 6 episodes in the last 7 days, and I made a prediction, I think, in the second episode that I basically said, look, I think that this is going to be an ongoing trend. We're going to see more and more of this. And I've been proven right. My sleep and all the other things I'd like to do for the show wishes that I was incorrect. But again, folks, all joking aside, if it interests people, this is why I'm here. I'm very fortunate to be in the position that I've got the time to cover things like this. And someone like Russ, who's, you know, trying to work a full-time job and everything else, he doesn't have the time. And I really appreciate him having me on the program to discuss it. Because, again, look, as with every other thing I've covered, I've found out new things. You know, I go into it and going, oh, well, this is going to be really straightforward. But there's always these different angles that crop up, different stories I find out. And one of the coolest things is people passing something to me and saying, well, you think you've found out what's going on. Aha, but have you read this?
Have you seen this?
Yeah.
Well, hey, man, I appreciate you having you on. You're always welcome back. It's always a pleasure. I'm glad we got a chance to talk today because I needed a monolith update because I had no clue what was going on with it. So I really appreciate it. Until then, man, just maybe plug your podcast, let everybody know where they can find you.
Oh, yeah, folks. So I'm the host of The Paranormal Sun. So it's just The Paranormal Sun. You can find me anywhere that you find your quality podcast content. You can also just go to www.theparanormalsun.com if you can't find it anywhere else. And I've, like I say, all of these Monolith episodes are all there. You can tell that they're the Monolith episodes because they all say Monolith. And they've all got photos of Monoliths in the episode notes there. And everything that I read on air, anytime I read an episode, there's always a link in the show notes. So if you'd like to go over and read it for yourself or say, well, I didn't quite get this or I didn't you can go over and check it out yourself. I'm not one of those people that tries to take credit and say, oh yeah, this is all me. It's and there's no way. I mean, I'd have to wear about 20 different hats to write all these stories and gather it all myself. So, and Russ, thanks for having me on. I always enjoy being on Hangar 18 Radio. It's always a pleasure, and I'm happy to come on anytime you think that I add value.
Yeah, man, you're welcome back anytime. You're gonna be my resident Monolith expert from here on in. So.
I'll take it. I was joking earlier today that this year in Tower Studios, I might put up a monolith instead of a Christmas tree. So, yeah.
Put the lights on the monolith.
That's the one.
All right, bud. Take care. All right, everybody. Well, that's it for this episode. If you're looking for more Monolith news, head on over to JT's podcast, The Paranormal Sun. He's got updates on all the latest Monolith news. And check out his latest episode because I'm his very first guest. Isn't that cool? And we had a great conversation. You'll enjoy listening to it. We cover everything under the sun when it comes to the paranormal, UFOs, conspiracies. So please check out his newest episode entitled Hangar 18 Radio Attacks. I think you'll enjoy it. All right, everybody. Until then, take care. Keep looking up. Don't get abducted by aliens. And if you do, please take pictures.